In a world divided by a Cold War.
There wasn't a lot of dialogue, and there was some bad blood.
A tournament brought together basketball's superpowers.
At stake, basketball supremacy in the United States.
And showed that greatness knows no border.
It's a landmark game and a lot of media attention.
Featuring a EuroLeague juggernaut, the greatest national team in the world, and your Milwaukee Bucks.
Pressing on the drive, leaves it for Cumming.
Three teams put it all on the line and changed basketball forever. This is the untold story of a moment that would open the doors to a new world where the best players could finally play on basketball's biggest stages.
Oh, a little dancing time, showtime.
This is the oral history of the 1987 McDonald's Open. I'm Charlie Behrens, and you're listening to Bucks vs. the World, Season 6 of the Behind the Bucks podcast, presented by Gallagher on the Bucks Plus Audio Network.
And I hope that people always remember that international basketball involving the NBA started right here in Milwaukee at the back.
This is Chapter 2, The World Basketball Revolution.
To commemorate the McDonald's Basketball Open.
For the sold-out crowd who rushed to the inaugural McDonald's Open in 1987 to feast on a never-before-seen exhibition of international basketball, the opening match between the Milwaukee Bucks and reigning EuroLeague champion Italian club Tracer Milan was basically the appetizer. Or, as they would call it in Italy, the antipasto. Or antipasto. I'm not Italian. But as it turned out, the game didn't have a lot of flavor.
Good ball movement. Cummings feeds Reynolds for the jam.
The Bucks dominated early and led by as much as 30 points in the second quarter.
Terry Cummings. And a slam dunk by McCann on the follow. The Soviet team clapping on that one. They love that one.
With anticipation building for the Bucks' upcoming matchup against the Soviet Union's national team, Tracer was basically an afterthought. And now, in front of the world, they were playing like it.
And that's the end of the first half from the Milwaukee Arena. The Bucks have led from start to finish for the first half. It's 64-44 at the half.
That year, Tracer had been on a generational run, winning the Italian championship, EuroLeague title, and Intercontinental Cup. In 1987, when the NBA only had 23 teams, fans in Europe called them the 24th team. And finally, in the second half, they started to show the world why.
Three-pointer by D'Antoni.
Way behind the 22-foot line.
With 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, they narrowed the lead to single digits.
I tell you, Boris Stankovic has got to be loving this. He wants to open the competition up. He said that they'd like to see the pros playing. And with the performance out here tonight with the Tracer Milan team making a game of it, trailing only by nine, he has done nothing. And they have done nothing but add fuel to the fire of Boris Stankovic.
And according to Bucks star Terry Cummins, that's when head coach Del Harris had to make an adjustment.
Del Harris, if I remember correctly, he probably put us all back in the game.
Bucks look a little tight to me, Rick. Well, you know, Terry's been sitting on the bench for quite a while, and it's tough to get off the bench and come back in and play great basketball.
It was about setting the standard. And he probably above all of us understood the ramifications of what was being done as far as the tournament. The precedent was being set.
The fact that I put the troops back in tells the story, obviously.
Bucks head coach Del Harris.
In those days, we didn't have any scouting reports anyway. We had film on Russia, but or Soviets, but we didn't have anything particularly on Tracer. I think we just thought we would win, but we underestimated them.
I certainly don't expect the Bucks to lose this ball game, but they certainly have allowed the Tracer Milan ball club to feel very good about their performance here this evening.
Now, even though it was technically an exhibition game during the preseason, this was also the first game to ever feature an NBA team taking on the champions of Europe. In other words, this wasn't a game Dell could afford to lose.
I couldn't let that slip away. It would have been worse than losing to the Soviets. Especially if you lose, you know, it was a new coach, he lost the lead. Bo.
But down the stretch, Dell and the Bucks would have to sweat it out.
Lamere wanted to shoot a three-pointer. McAdoo. 36 for Bob McAdoo.
A monsoon of mid-range shots from Tracer Milan star Bob McAdoo kept the team in striking distance late into the game.
I just wanted to make it hard for them, you know, like when I played in the NBA, I wanted to make it hard for them to guard me. But it was a very, very competitive game.
Matched up all night with Bucks star Terry Cummins, McAdoo wanted to prove he could still play with the best of them.
Well, he was considered the best power forward in the league. And he proved it. You know, he could score on anybody. He was tough. He was physical.
Don't watch the last play. Pressey draws D'Antoni with him and on the trail. He knew his man was there. And coming right down the middle for the stuff shot was Terry Cummins. Excellent play.
He was a tough cover, too, for NBA players. You know, but I think I kind of showed, you know, who got the better of that matchup there. I remember I got the better of that matchup there.
D'Antoni, McAdoo.
And I'm sure some people's heads turned and said, oh, 36-year-old Bob McAdoo don't look like he's over the hill.
But eventually, the Bucks made enough stops to put the game away.
Well, that's a good pass by McAdoo there.
Pressey on the drive, leaves it for Cummings.
We had a chance. I think one of our guys had a pretty open layup, and he missed the layup.
Tracer Milan star Mike D'Antoni.
When we missed the layup, it kind of took the wind out of our sails. And we just couldn't get over the hump, but they're that good.
The Bucks lead by 12 points. Pressey on the drive. That's the ball game. Well, Del Harris escapes with a 12-point victory after opening up a 30-point lead in the first half, but the Italians came back and made it a game. Final score tonight from Milwaukee, the Bucks 123, Tracer Milan 111.
The final buzzer sounded and the Bucks survived. But even in a loss, Tracer Milan showed they could stand toe-to-toe with a great NBA team and take it the distance. Here's former Tracer coach Dan Peterson, who called the game for an Italian broadcaster.
Obviously, they made a statement, you know, we're a lot better than you thought.
Speaking to local news station Fox 6 before the game, D'Antoni tried his best to manage expectations.
We have no illusions of coming in and dominating the Bucks. We would like to make a good showing for European basketball. Whether a good showing means that we get beat by 25 or 50, I don't know. We'll find out Friday.
So after a competitive showing, the team was pretty happy with how they performed.
I just know that after the game, and then, you know, McAdoo scored 40, and I thought I played well. And so we were, like, super excited.
Mike D'Antoni.
I mean, just really, you know, like we'd won another championship.
Well, maybe not everyone on the team.
The only one that were pissed off was Bob. And I think that for us, it's okay, we lost. Not doesn't matter, but we were not pissed off.
This is Tracer Milan star Dino Menegin.
Bob was crazy. I'm glad that he didn't slap our faces, you know.
But as frustrated as McAdoo may have been, he knew Tracer's performance would leave an impression on the NBA.
I think the NBA kind of looked at that game. People were watching and said, wow, these European players can play.
And even raised their profile back at home.
Of course. I think they saw that European teams, we weren't that far behind the NBA in talent and in playing. I think that helped the European basketball fans over there, you know, who had been watching NBA basketball and thinking, you know, this is the best basketball in the world, which it is. And when they saw us hang with these guys, they probably were saying, hey, these guys are not too far off from an NBA team. You know, once we got back to Europe, it made people want to see us even more because of how we did in that game against Milwaukee.
For Tracer legend Dino Menegin, who would go on to be inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame in 2003, that opening match was a real moment in basketball history.
Yes, because, you know, we with this kind of tournament, we open the door. We make it more open.
Today's game has generated a lot of media coverage, not only in the U.S., but internationally as well. There should be well over 35 countries ranging from Argentina to West Germany, either broadcasting the game live or tape delayed.
And the world wasn't just watching on TV. 300 journalists from 13 countries descended on Milwaukee to see the McDonald's Open in person.
La partita ha una grandissima importanza anche storica. Se vogliamo dire così, è preso Milano. Farà storia.
Però ha migliorato, per esempio, l'Unione Sovietica il rebote difensivo del rispetto al 13, perché già che il Milwaukee sia molto.
It was here I found Andrea Bassani, Italian TV color commentator shooting free throws. He says Italians already know about the Bucks, and during their broadcast, they'll also learn something about Milwaukee.
Oh, sure. Before leaving, I produced a little feature on Milwaukee with the footage that I had, and we talk about the city, we talk about the Milwaukee Brewers, the Green Bay Packers, everything that's involving sport in this area of Wisconsin.
American sports writer Jack McCallum spoke to us about the reaction he saw from European journalists after the game.
I was sitting next to a couple international reporters, and I just remember them being incredibly excited and animated about this.
Vladimir Sokoy is the New York-based correspondent for the Soviet news agency who's sitting courtside in Milwaukee tonight. He'll be covering all three games.
According to our newspaper, which I received from Moscow, the interest is great, terrific. This is an event which the Soviet fans had been waiting for many, many years. It's great.
Jack captured the enthusiasm of a French reporter in his Sports Illustrated article, who told him after the game, "Tomorrow morning when people pick up the paper in Paris, they will simply not believe it. This is a real date in European basketball history." That reporter, Didier Lacour, would go on to write a cover story about the McDonald's Open in the French magazine Maxi Basket. The title? October 1987, The World Basketball Revolution. The Bucks may have won the game, but given how close it was, many wondered if they could lose the tournament.
People were really, really, really animated, and I think it raised the specter that the Bucks could be challenged in the final game, that if they end up playing the Soviets, that, you know, certainly going to be a possibility that they were going to get beat.
Back in the Bucks locker room after the game, star big man Jack Sikma could tell the press were growing nervous that the Bucks might lose their next game to the Soviet Union's national team.
Oh, absolutely. I remember a few of the reporters, national reporters there, kind of poo-pooing us, saying the Bucks are the way to play. They could embarrass us and that type of thing. I do know coming out of it, there was a lot of people said, hey, if the Bucks play like this, they're going to have their hands full with the Soviet Union. We felt we were carrying the banner for the NBA and USA basketball.
More on Behind the Bucks presented by Gallagher coming up after this.
Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher. Trust is the foundation of any successful partnership, especially when it comes to managing risk and planning your future. That's why businesses turn to Gallagher. With over 95 years of experience, Gallagher has the expertise to help businesses navigate complex challenges and seize new opportunities. As a proud partner of the Milwaukee Bucks, Gallagher is dedicated to building confidence together. To learn more, visit AJG.com. Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and H&R Benefits consultant.
And those big, bad Soviet players, they were soaking up the game from the front row.
Bob McCann commits the foul. There's some of the Soviet players. Alexander Volkov in the center, one of the good young players, a 6'9 forward.
Young star Alexander Volkov was amazed at the Bucks' size.
We watch game against Milwaukee Bucks Milan, and we see how big and strong is Milwaukee Bucks team. I mean, they size, you know, they have starting five, huge guys, his point guard, like, almost 6'8", like shooting guard was like 6'7", 6'8", you know, like small forward was 6'9", and two big guys, Jack Sikma and Brewer, was a huge guys.
And Volkov wasn't exaggerating. The Bucks had one of the tallest starting lineups in NBA history.
It's really, we're surprised of size of that team, because we used to be one of the tallest and biggest team. We get used to it, but now we have team who is the biggest than us. It was a very unusual feeling.
Taking in the game courtside, Volkov began to feel that as big as the Bucks were on the court, the moment was even bigger.
It was a big deal, you know. It's a lot of journalists from all over the world. You know, for Milwaukee, it's just beginning of training camp. And but in reality, it was something big thing. Everybody acting like it's some historical big things happening here.
The McDonald's Open would be the first set of NBA games ever broadcast in Russia. So for Volkov and his teammates, watching the Bucks play Tracer Milan, that really meant something to them. These guys loved basketball. They dedicated their lives to it. And this was the first time they could see an NBA team up close in competition. Because in 1987, just watching a tape recording of an NBA game wasn't an easy thing to do in the USSR. Here's Volkov's teammate, Sergei Tarakanov, explaining what it would take for him to basically smuggle in tapes of NBA games into the Soviet Union.
Yeah, on television, it was not televised, these games. We had no emission of NBA and sports channels. I had a friend in France, a French guy. He recorded me NBA games. I brought it to USSR, and during the camp, I collect all my teammates, and we were watching the games, and really it was some kind of not usual stuff. Not a lot of people can watch it.
That fascination and amazement the Soviet players felt seeing all-star caliber NBA players in their prime, that's how many of the tournament spectators felt finally getting to see the Soviet national team's legendary head coach, Alexander Gomelsky. This is then NBA executive Rick Welts.
One of the other gigantic characters here was the coach, Gomelsky, who was a mythical figure in basketball and the Soviet team, and he ran the Soviet team.
The big thing about Gomelsky, you have to understand, he was a revolutionary figure.
Longtime Tracer Milan coach Dan Peterson.
What's the definition of a genius? They take something that looks complicated to us, and it's simple to them. And after that, you're saying, why didn't I think of that? You know, that's Gomelsky. He was like the godfather.
Many definitely described him as a godfather. But in Russia, Gomelsky was known as father, or papa. Here's Soviet star Sarunas Marshalonis.
We called him papa, as a dad, as a father, papa. So I think that good description of his personality, that, you know, he was, I would say, very far from us. We were listening to his thoughts, minds, you know. Of course, sometimes we're silently laughing at his English, you know.
But in order to bring a team like the Soviet Union together, you needed someone between a father and the godfather. Because according to then NBA executive Brian McIntyre, the history of the Soviet Union, an empire forged in war, created its own challenges for the national team.
A number of the players told us that they were playing for the Soviet national team, but they were not Russian. They were Lithuanian or something else. And so they were not happy. Russia had taken over their country and they didn't like it, but they had no choice. If they wanted to play international basketball, they had to play for the Soviet national team.
The Soviet Union would eventually split into 15 different countries. And according to Soviet star Sarunas Marshalonis, the vast majority of the team's players did not come from Russia.
Funny part, you know, that the majority players that was from Baltics. You can calculate, you know, four Lithuanians, you know, Latvian, Estonian, Ukrainian, Sasha, Kazakhstan. There was Tikhonenko, and I think only few Russians. There was Tarakanov, probably.
And Gomelsky's greatest skill was uniting a team full of talented players from different backgrounds and getting them to play as one. This is star Soviet forward Alexander Volkov.
Yeah, he was a coach with a typical Soviet type of coach. You know, he was tough on the practice, a lot of practice. And, you know, Soviet coach is not only a basketball coach. He has to be a kind of psychologist for the players, because we have players from all over the Soviet Union, which are different Estonian, Latvian, Lithuanian, Ukrainian, Russians, you know, Georgians, all kind of players he has to kind of bring together and make a team work.
He was a very good manager, I would say, because he managed our team. We were a team collected from talented guys, I would say.
This is Soviet forward Sergei Tarakanov.
So his talent is that he was so dictator and managed players, be afraid of him.
And the players definitely had something to be afraid of. Gomelski controlled more than the lineups and rotations. According to Tim Shea, who was a longtime player and coach in Europe, he controlled the quality of his players' lives.
He was the godfather up there. He ran the show, and he did whatever he wanted to do. The thing about the Soviets at that time was centralized determination of what was going to happen, and it was in his hands, what tournaments, what players, how much money. You know, but that was something, you know, you didn't get to read much about that because it was a closed country. It was the Iron Curtain. And they weren't kidding around. Iron Curtain, they, you know, you could practically touch it.
As Tim described the qualities of the Soviet team, he revealed just how much was at stake for them personally.
Strong, physically fit, dedicated, knowing that they had to be successful, otherwise they were going back to work in that system that lived, you know, that was part of the Soviet system, which wasn't, I'm sure, exactly copacetic. You know, Gomelski was the godfather, and he distributed whatever resources the government gave him. Everything was government-sponsored. Everything was government-controlled.
In that Soviet system, the national team players were lucky to be basketball players. But even the privilege to play in a sport rather than work in a coal mine came with its own limitations. And it gave Gomelski more power than your typical head coach or general manager. Soviet forward Alexander Volkov explains.
Because we have a little salaries, you know, he has to find a way to give him something to motivate us. In the same time, to be a coach, he has to be a kind of GM. To take care of our life, to take care of our things, because it was not like that time, for example, get used to in US. For example, players sign a contract, he get receiving money, he know how to get apartment, he know how to buy house, he know how to buy car. When you get money, you know what to do with them, you know, to make your life in a good level.
But even something as simple as getting paid and taking care of your basic needs was a lot more complicated in the Soviet Union than the US.
In Soviet Union, you cannot do this. You have to find a way to get apartment because they not sell the apartment. You have to get apartment from the government. Coach has to convince some authority, the kid is very talented, he's a national team player, we need to give him apartment. You have to give him rights to buy a car because you cannot go to store and buy a car, for example. Same thing with the furniture. You have to manage everything for players to give them some opportunity to get everything and kind of satisfy their need in their families. For coaches in Soviet Union, it was important to be kind of managing this out of basketball. This is, was different. And Gomelski was great on this, you know. He was great coach, great manager, and he know how to deal with the players psychologically.
David Stern would later suggest that even getting the Soviets to participate in the McDonald's Open took some delicate discussions to convince
Initially,
them to come.
Boris Stankovic, the Secretary General of FIBA, proposed it about 2 years ago, but it took some delicate discussions with the Italians and with the Soviets, and we're very happy to see it happen.
And according to then NBA executive Rick Welt, Gomelski was the one who would have to be convinced.
Everything happened the way he wanted to have it happen. Somehow he was involved in the economics of the deal. Not quite sure how that worked, but that was who had to be convinced, really, that this was a good idea.
For Gary Bender, who would call the tournament finale on ABC, given the spectacle the McDonald's Open was becoming, Gomelski wouldn't have come unless he knew his team was ready.
When I heard about the game, my first thought was, how good are these guys going to be? They must be pretty good because the Soviets would not send somebody to the United States that did not represent them well. I mean, they had to be a juggernaut. They had to be the best of the best.
NBA front offices were aware of the talent on the Soviet team. And in 1986, the Atlanta Hawks drafted Alexander Volkov in the sixth round of the NBA draft.
Oh, it was very strange things because we were in Spain. We had some tournament in Spain. I came in the morning into the breakfast and some people start to say, oh, Sacha, congratulations. I said, what's happening? What's happening? Everybody said, it's a great deal happening. I said, what's happening? You get drafted by Atlanta Hawks. Of course, that time we traveled to United States with national team. We traveled in Europe. We saw NBA. And I personally get anything and can read and learn about it. I understand what draft means, but I don't understand what's happened. Nobody asked me nothing, you know? And all of a sudden I was drafted. Of course, I was excited. It was great things. It's unusual thing. We were, me and a couple other guys from our team was drafted, and it was first ever somebody was drafted from territory of Soviet Union, you know.
It was clear that Volkov was a valuable prospect. 6'10", athletic, and highly skilled, to his teammate Sergei Tarakhanov, Volkov was not your traditional Soviet big man.
He was also a new guy with a new style of the game, because tall guy and old style of basketball was big guy who rebound the ball and he passed ball to the point guard, to the playmaker. Volkov was one of the first guy who can rebound and dribble ball to another basket and made the pass and play good defense.
And just a few months before the tournament tipped off in 1987, their teammate, Sarunas Marcellonis, was drafted by the Golden State Warriors. And it was former Bucks head coach Don Nelson who drafted him. Nelson had a historic run as the Bucks head coach, reaching 500 wins faster than any coach in NBA history to that point. But in May of 1987, he resigned after falling out with then-Bucks owner Herb Kohl. He was named general manager of the Warriors shortly thereafter. Between golf rounds in Hawaii, Don Nelson told us how he first learned about Marcellonis.
Well, my son found him, so I didn't know anything about him, really. Donnie played with the AIA team and went over to Russia and played the Russian teams over there for, you know, he was over in Europe for over a month playing against all the best European players, so he really had a great idea of what the talent level was like over there, and I didn't. Anything that goes around with Sarunas being drafted, you know, I owe all that to my son, Donnie.
And Donnie's confidence in Marcellonis' talent convinced his father, Nelly, to take a gamble and draft the Soviet star.
I owe all that to Donnie. He's the guy that was over there, played against them, convinced me to take him, convinced me that these guys would be as good or better than the draft players that we were looking at. So that tweaked my interest, of course, and the rest is history.
For Marcellonis, the news of getting drafted was definitely a surprise.
I mean, that wasn't something that I understood, you know, drafted, because I never thought, you know, I'll play anywhere, you know, outside of Lithuania, and that's a draft that was a mystery, kind of.
To his teammate Alexander Volkov, Sarunas' talent was obvious.
Oh, he was physically strong. He has a great outside shot. He's a left-handed guy who also can drive inside with a strong move, you know. He played great defense because he has a strong, long arms. He was very physical for European basketball player. And he was a great, strong player, and I think everybody see it and everybody pay attention. In his physical condition and his skills, he can be really good NBA player.
But the excitement of getting drafted quickly wore off. Playing in the NBA? The Soviet Union didn't even let its players play professionally in other European countries. Crossing the Iron Curtain would only come at great cost. This is how Tim Shea, who has spent his career in Europe, crudely described the dynamic.
The big players, the great players were Soviets, but they didn't want them going to the States. You know, you staying here. You're not going over there. We're not going to let you go. You know, we're going to take your wife to a camp up there in Siberia somewhere.
And as Sergei Tarakhanov told us, that wasn't even that much of an exaggeration.
We were in another country, in another planet, like I would say, because we were behind the wall. No one can travel, no one can. Only way was to stay and not come back to the Soviet Union, to stay outside. But, you know, we had some samples in ice hockey, for example, in other kind of sports, but it was very, very, very rare because you have to cut everything. In those times, if you stay, for example, in a Western country, you can forget about your relatives, about your family, because you cannot come back. You cannot come back, otherwise you're going to the prison immediately. It's kind of challenge and kind of actions which not everyone can afford.
Even for the chance to realize a dream and play in the NBA, for Alexander Volkov, leaving the Soviet Union was not an option.
Only thing I can go like this, I have to defect. I have to run away from team, plus my parents, my friends, my relatives. I cannot do this, you know. I cannot morally make this step.
Sure, when the Soviet players landed in Milwaukee for the McDonald's Open, their KGB escorts confiscated their passports and monitored their every move, but that's how every trip to the U.S. went. This trip came with a few perks, and the players took full advantage of them. One was being able to visit a local record store.
Of course, we're not able to legally come to the Soviet tour and buy Michael Jackson tape or something, but it was already exist and people just share the tapes, recorded, re-recorded, and of course I bought a lot of tapes, what I like. That moment was popular, and McDonald's, we've been many times before, you know, it was part of the program, I think.
And for Sergei Tarakanov, they weren't about to turn down a free meal.
I remember they invite us to McDonald's, and free food was very important for us because officially we were amateur, not officially we were professional, but according to standards of professional life and professional money, for example, we were absolutely amateurs. We were living better than standard and a regular citizen of USSR, we were much better. But anyway, it was not comparable to foreign countries, of course. It was peanuts compared to the Western style of life. It's not mean that we were hungry, but we were counting this limited number of dollars which we had in the United States. When they invite us to McDonald's, for example, it was good, but it was not so pleasant to eat burgers in front of cameras and videos. So let's say my feelings from this time was that, you know, I felt not comfortable.
And they capped it all off with a trip to the movie theater. Here's Sports Illustrated writer Jack McCallum.
I mean, these guys are watching, you know, I don't know what the hell they felt when they watched Fatal Attraction. I mean, they couldn't even, I'm sure they couldn't get a PG-13 movie in Russia.
Well, you know what they say. Nothing gets you ready to play some basketball like listening to the King of Pop, eating some fast food, and watching an erotic thriller with your best buds. But the Soviet Union's first match was against an opponent they were very familiar with. The players on Tracer Milan and the Soviet national team had faced each other many times, but this would be the first where the club team would play against the national team. Here's Soviet star Sarunas Marshalonis.
We knew better Tracer team because we played before, so that was, you know, Minigin, Makadu, so we knew that European team much better.
And the match would be a showcase of European talent for NBA front offices that knew little about the level of play across the pond. Here's Sports Illustrated writer Jack McCallum.
The NBA teams were using this as a trial for guys like Sharonis Marshalonis and Volkov to find out if they could play in the league, because suddenly there was this rich vein of talent out there, which we just started noticing. So we got a load of Marshalonis. We thought that they were kind of soft, you know, couldn't play that type of defense, would kind of wear down, didn't have the athleticism. There was a stereotypical European player. So it definitely created a rehearsal for them.
Warriors general manager and former Bucks coach Don Nelson traveled back to his old stomping grounds to see his team's latest draft pick, Sarunas Marshalonis, up close. Although he was open-minded enough to listen to his son Donnie and take a chance on a European prospect, he still wrestled with the perception of European talent that many decision-makers in the NBA held at the time.
Even the small forwards weren't quick enough. It's just my belief. I didn't, you know, I never saw him play, so I didn't know, but that was the opinion of the NBA, and it was my opinion just because, you know, my friends believed that, so I believed it too.
A day after Tracer took the Bucks to the wire, the stage was set for them to play against the best national team in the world, the Soviet Union. And when the game tipped off, Nelson was amazed by what he saw.
Yeah, my memories were that my son was right. Those players were really good.
I'm Charlie Behrens, and here's what to expect on the next Behind the Bucks, presented by Gallagher.
Everybody, as I recall it, had sympathy for Del Harris. From our perspective, it was all, they put this guy in a really shit situation.
It can't be understated because there was the unknown. It was very evident that we were upholding the honor, not only of Milwaukee and the NBA, but the entire country. That's a heavy weight.
It must have been going through their minds. I know it kind of went through mine, because you're saying to yourself, oh my goodness, could we actually lose to the Soviets? You can't lose to the Soviets, right? You can't. It can't happen.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.